Thanks. I'm Rebecca Hallett from the University of Guelph, which is up in Guelph, Ontario, Canada, so I'm not too far from Toronto. The Contarinia nasturtii, or the Swede midge, is a crucifer specialist that is native to Eurasia. We first identified it in Ontario in the year 2000 from a number of grower sites near to Toronto, but symptomatic plants had been found in grower fields since about the mid-1990s. At the time that it was found, it was already causing serious levels of economic damage in certain grower fields. And now, the Swede midge is found in six Canadian provinces and at least three states, including New Jersey, Massachusetts, and New York. In terms of the life cycle, the adults are relatively short-lived. The females lay their eggs in clusters on the meristematic tissue of the plants, and the larvae will feed there gregariously for a couple of weeks before springing themselves to the soil for pupation. They're multi-voltine, with the number of generations varying geographically, and they overwinter as a diapause larva in a cocoon in the soil. The types of damage that Swede midge causes to the crop depends to some extent on the stage of crop development, but it's all characterized by sort of swelling of stem tissue, some corky scarring, twisting up and crumpling of leaves. Canola is also an acceptable host plant for the Swede midge, and here we see a range of damage symptoms dependent upon the time, the plant stage at the time of Swede midge infestation. And down here on this flower bud, you can see a little Swede midge larva there. So at the time that Swede midge was discovered in Ontario, we also found that there was relatively limited information about the Swede midge in the literature. There were a few studies that were that provided life history information with respect to temperature-related development and fecundity rates, but there was no information available on factors controlling diapause induction and termination. As I said, it's multi-voltine, and so we were also interested in trying to in determining how many generations we had in Ontario. And this type of life history information is, of course, important for developing proper management strategies for this economic pest. At the time of the start of the modeling exercise that I'm about to describe, our sort of state of knowledge can be summarized by this figure, which represents Swede midge captures and pheromone traps over the course of the season at three of our sites. So in Ontario, we have first emergence of adults occurring in mid to late May. The last adults are seen in late September or early October, and we see larvae feeding on plants into October. We thought that based on life history, temperature-related life history information, that we might be dealing with five generations, so sort of one, two, three, four, and five, but you can see it's kind of messy. Whoops. Excuse me. Okay. Try that again. So we know that these two peaks here are too close together to represent different Those two first two peaks were too close together to represent different generations, and so they likely represent different emergence phenotypes. We had additional evidence of emergence phenotypes from emergence trap studies that we conducted with emergence traps over bare soil plots. And here the emergence of adults is represented by the solid line. You see there's prolonged emergence through May and June, but we have emergence of the overwinter generation occurring in July and August as well. And this sort of pattern of emergence behavior, or emergence of the overwinter generation, has also been documented in populations in Norway. So for management purposes, but also to try to gain some insights into the lesser known aspects of Swede midge life history, we developed a phenological model that we call Midge Emerge. And this was aimed primarily at predicting the timing of emergence of adult generations. We used the software package Dimex, which was developed at CSIRO in Australia, and it's a cohort-based life process model, so you can include developmental parameters for all life stages, as well as environmental parameters, and the cohort is considered to be a group of individuals that enter a life stage at the same time and are subject to the same environmental conditions. So these are the environmental and life cycle parameters that were included in the model. We included development rate information based on the literature, as well as factors controlling the transition from one life stage to the next. However, because we are not concerned about modeling the populations themselves, we did not include any extrinsic mortality factors. So we developed the model first using a single phenotype and using adult captures from one of our sites for parameterization. We focused on trying to model accurately the first emergence of adults in the spring and then the disappearance of adults in the fall. The timing of emergence events in the spring is related, of course, to factors controlling diapause termination and pupil development. So through various iterative alterations of the model, we're able to determine the likely conditions that lead to diapause termination in the sweet midge, and these are now under investigation in controlled environment laboratory studies, as well as the moisture requirements for the transition from the pupal stage to the adult stage, and diapause induction day length in the fall. This process is a little bit like playing Goldilocks. In this example, trying a diapause induction day length of 13 hours or less results in adults being present far later into the fall than we observe, whereas a longer day length sees them disappearing earlier. And a value somewhere in the middle, while maybe not quite or just right, gives us a fairly good approximation of what we observe in the field. So the blue line here now represents the output of our model with a single emergence phenotype. And you can see it simulates fairly well the emergence of adults in mid-May, and the next generation arising from that in late June. But there are several periods of adult emergence that are not well simulated by using a single phenotype, particularly emergence of adults here in mid-June. And so these results suggest that there are there's more than one phenotype, and that a single phenotype does not explain our observed emergence patterns. The two phenotypes could differ in the factors controlling the transitions from the diapause larval stage to the pupal stage, or those controlling pupal development or the pupal to adult transition. However, alteration of these variables did not result in simulation of an adult emergence event in the middle of June, and so we could the results suggest that the phenotypes do not differ in their response to environmental parameters. However, manipulation of the required diapause development days did result in simulation of a peak in the middle of June, and so this suggests that the phenotypes differ in their diapause intensity. So here's our results again with a single phenotype, and in the dark blue now, the midge-emerge model with both phenotypes included. And so we do a better job of simulating the emergence of those of adults in the springtime, and the later peaks are looking a little bit closer to what we see. The model, though, predicts that there will be an emergence of adults in the late, or another adult generation here in late October, which we don't observe in the field. We know that rather than four and a half generations, we are probably experiencing four generations of each of the two phenotypes in Ontario. So in summary, our emergence patterns in Ontario can be explained by the presence of two emergence phenotypes that differ in diapause intensity. Diapause intensity is generally has a genetic basis. However, environmental conditions during diapause induction can also result in differences in diapause intensity. The presence of different emergence phenotypes have advantages for a species, as the population can prevail despite some emergence occurring in conditions of uncertain host availability or during adverse environmental conditions. And it may be this characteristic contributes to some extent to the success of sweet midge in establishing and spreading throughout North America. So I'd just like to acknowledge the following people for their involvement in various aspects of this project, as well as our funding agencies. Thank you.